Next case in our calendar is 97-2730, State of Ohio versus Ricky Smith.
Same question as in the last case. How does this conflict with Swartcheck?
Well,
especially given the second part of the question, that the 8th District, who decided Swartcheck, have now departed from it.
Well,
I think.
The 8th District, I think, has divided panels on the Swartcheck. There have been subsequent cases decided in the 8th District after Swartcheck, where some panels have
But it has to be a conflict between the districts.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, now accepting affidavits presented in support of the post-conviction relief as true, how does that conflict with Swartcheck?
Thank you.
Time again, this court has said that granting post-conviction relief, whether or not a hearing is going to be granted, is a matter of discretion for the trial judge. Jackson and Justice Resnick said it in another case, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was a dissent too. But in any event, it's been said time and time again. Do you agree with that proposition, that it's discretionary with the trial judge? Okay. Doesn't Swarcheck take all of that discretion away?
No, Your Honor. Swarcheck is not all particular. The allegations of the court's decision to be simply true is determining whether an evidentiary hearing is required under the statute. And that means whether something is grounds for relief of the amendment. The only way a petition can get an evidentiary hearing is that the allegations of the officer are affirmatively disproved by the record, and they're reported in the petition to the petition officer's staff. So,
except the petitioner can say whatever he or she wants in the petition, and if the trial court, pursuant to Swarcheck and what you're asking us, has to accept it to be true, I understand your threshold, the threshold that has to be gotten over, but it is so easy to prepare an affidavit that is clearly not disproved by the record, that is just another attempt at further discovery.
Well, it's initial state of concern because that civil rule is held back to the title.
Well, if we say it's trial court discretion, and yet adopt Swartcheck, then every time that one of these affidavits comes forward, we have to determine, well, the trial court didn't accept it to be true, or the trial court said it was frivolous on its face, then we've got to weigh that, don't we?
Well, if the trial court finds that it's frivolous on its face, then the trial court in the United States is to say, there are sufficient opportunities to Congress and the Congress have been security to be granted to support whatever decision is claimed, whatever constitutional violation is claimed.
It just seems to me we're complicating the whole thing by saying that we've got to go through these other weighing when we've already said the trial courts on the ground, they understand what's happening, they understand the record, and they say this does not present operative facts. Discretion.
No problem with that whatsoever, Your Honor. Because that's what this court tells the papers, the lawyers, the papers, the Jackson, and subsequent decisions. When the trial court looks to determine whether something of operative facts are presented, it doesn't have to look at the affidavit to make that determination. But it's making that assessment whether there are operative facts presented. There's no need to engage in further assessment. If there are operative facts, it doesn't have to be facts demonstrated in claim, this is another thing that is security.
By the state health district itself, one of the judges on the panel, but there's also on the panel from Fortune and Judge Naylor.
Is it accurate what she said? Because that's the case I was referring to, called Crowder, isn't it? But she seems to indicate, your adversary seems to indicate, that since Voracek, there have been other panels who have followed it and some who have not. Is that accurate?
It's accurate to the extent that some of the same judges who were on the Voracek case have been on the same panels in the subsequent 8th District case.
Okay.
Judge Blackman for one, mm-hmm. Judge Naylor for the other. This court should take the opportunity to reaffirm state's reasoning in favor of the settlement and firmly state that post-conviction proceeding is not civil retrial of the defendant's criminal conviction. The court should hold in this case that Civil Rule 12 standards for review of a civil case, preliminary civil complaint on a motion to dismiss, is clearly in conflict with subsection C of Provided Code 2953.21, which requires the trial court to not only review the petition and the affidavit and evidence supplied with the petition, but also the entire record, files, all the antecedents, proceedings, including the trial transcript. That was scheduled done in this case by Judge Zay, the trial judge, who is the very same trial judge that heard the trial. And the court of appeal decision follows that. The rule urged to my appellant today, post-conviction affidavits must be accepted as true regardless of how they conflict or compare with the record, is what I perceive as an extension of 1975 decision in favor of the Popovich. This court confronted that very issue in 1980 when it issued a decision in favor of Jackson and rejected the argument made by the appellant today. The trial court in that case had before it a petition and affidavit signed by the trial counsel, representing himself, that in an aggravated murder case he was forced to go to trial in 4 days after appointment and was therefore ineffective in trial strategy and preparation, etc. That affidavit, if taken as true, and the court of appeals had held in favor of Jackson, following Voracek, the court had evidence of an entry hearing. This court in St. Louis and Jackson reversed that court of appeals and said that Milanovich does not go that far. The trial court moved the petition, the court of appeals reversed, citing Milanovich, and this court reversed the trial court, the court of appeals and reinstated the dismissal. This court recognized in Jackson that the affidavit did not demonstrate substantive grounds for relief because both prongs of the Strickland versus Washington district those two problems being, first, did the defense counsel do anything that was not professionally reasonable choice for counsel to make at the time? And secondly, was the prejudice to the defendant's case that brought him up to have a fair trial in Strickland 7? The court's decisions in Jackson, Hanky, Cole, and Capra, making the latter three null following Samuel Jackson, except in the context of the guilty plea, hold the trial court dismissed as specious for failing to transcend the domain of the privilege and the affidavit, which it finds to be that's what was done in this case. And this recognizes the fundamental difference between the post-conviction proceeding and the ordinary civil action. That's what this case was about. With civil action, there has not yet been a trial. Trial is still fighting. With post-conviction proceeding, there has already been a criminal trial where proof of guilt has been established beyond reasonable doubt. In our case, by jury trial. In the Jackson case, by jury trial. In the other cases,
When examining the record under the Milanovich test, when the trial court examines the record, should there be a difference if there is a conflict in the record testimony and that testimony is from the defendant versus other witnesses as in this case, arguably, because the counsel says it really wasn't a flat-out contradiction, because the defendant really didn't say that Ms. Shepherd was unable to come.
He didn't say it.
He was cut off in his testimony.
Exactly.
Right.
He didn't say those words. The statement was made at page 29 of the transcript.
Right.
The defendant counsel said that Shepherd was unable. That's the conclusion he drew from what the defendant told him.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
In other cases, the bigger picture I'm wondering about, you know, would we have a different test under the requirement of having an evidentiary hearing or evaluating the evidence if there is a conflict with the defendant himself contradicts the information in the petition? I wonder if that's to be treated differently than another witness where a credibility issue might be better determined, or is the defendant always stuck with conflicting testimony, perhaps.
I think you hit on a very important point, and I want to tie that in with the Strickland versus Washington test. It says in Strickland versus Washington, reasonableness of counsel's actions may be determined or substantially influenced by the defendant's own statements or actions. Counsel's actions, are usually based quite properly on informed strategic choices made by the defendant and on information supplied by the defendant. In particular, decisions are reasonable depending on critically on such information from the defendant.
Let's talk about Strickland. When will the trial court use the Strickland test? Should it be applied? Is that the opening round? The first, you take everything as true before you even decide. It's unaffected. The evidentiary hearing question is not in play when you first look at everything taken as true, don't even examine the record, and decide whether or not that meets the Strickland test. That but for these particular errors,
well,
like the sister, maybe it didn't matter. But do you do that first, and then look to comparing the record and the petition, the evidence? It may be first that it's disqualified on a right out the door, Strickland isn't met. Then you probably reapply Strickland test at the end of it. Okay.
I think if we look at the two affidavits, maybe all the affidavits are fairly failed because it doesn't rise to the state of Jack, does not rise to the level of threat. The counsel made a strategic choice based on what Ms. Moffitt said in the affidavit she pulled in the trial. This person's time didn't match. So when you get to the other affidavit, you have to go to the Strickland and say, did the defendant tell his attorney facts that would lead him to make a strategic choice not to go through the procedures of getting this witness on record, getting this witness from Florida up here to Florida?
Now, on that subject, though, I'm not sure that we have, that would be an application of that idea, but here, we don't know what the defendant told counsel here from either the affidavits.
We do know what he said in the road. We do know what the attorney said in the statement.
Yeah. Wouldn't you, counsel, that you're not advocating that a trial court can make credibility judgments about the writer of an affidavit only comparing the record? I mean, if it's a straightforward believe or disbelieve, can a trial court do that without a hearing?
as I stated in brief, I think along those lines, their statement is certainly correct on the fact that we had a competing affidavit from the prosecutor that rebutted the affidavit filed with the post-condition petition. You can't decide that case without an evidentiary hearing. But that's not what the court meant to say when they issued this rule across the 8th District. It did not say you always have to take all the affidavits for true. That's not what it said.
Do you get the feeling that if we do anything approaching the fort check rule, that we're going to be perceived to be mandating hearings in every one of these matters?
That is very, very much a concern of mine. It's even been cited in a motion for reconsideration before this court in the capital case of other counties. This last week, I received a motion for reconsideration after the court denied the appeal to take the position of the defender's office that filed that very thing on the real matter. It would be a very broad application, a seeking broad application to the state.
Have you reviewed State v. Moore out of the 1st District?
Yes, I have.
What would be wrong with that solution?
State v. Moore, Judge Bessin wrote a very long, lengthy decision that went through the reasons and history of the post-conviction proceeding, analyzed it in the federal count, and seeing that as the higher law of the bill, there is that discretion for the trial court to say, this is a substantive ground of relief, this is not a substantive.
Do you read State v. Moore as being any retreating from absolute discretion standard of what we've had in Milanovich and all those other cases?
No, I believe it's along the keeping with this court's decision. It actually gives some guidelines as to how to exercise discretion in deciding the credibility issues on the
court. Okay, now one more time. On what point of law does this case differ from Svorczyk?
Point of law that is the actual distinction.
There is no real conflict between them, is there?
Thank you, Mr. Eichel. Mr.
Caldwell is still a Court of Appeals case, 8th District.
Yes, the 8th District was, and then based on the 9-5 case, and the Court of Appeals from the Public Court of Appeals, that's what the basis was certified by the Public Court of Appeals about the judge case, and that's where we're here right now. But we did file, pursuant to the rule, we did file an additional authority of that case. The question was asked whether the same district has ruled the opposite way. I had no knowledge of that. I had knowledge of Caldwell, I had knowledge of Svorczyk, I had knowledge after, which just, you brought up about making a comment about the appellate counsel. The papers after the test are agreed, specifically talked about the no appellate counsel after could have looked at the record, could have seen the list, talked about witness in Castro, and raised that as an effective assistant counsel on the table, and that's why it's a straight to And then that case.
They argue that this was
council to raise that issue as an effective to the council. I think there's when you raise an effective to the council, I think there's no whole bar on that.
I thought you answered a question earlier that the Ms. Rankin, that the other districts conflict, if these two aren't in conflict, do you think they're, which case do you think is a direct rule of law conflict with the one we have, Mr. Smith's case?
Thank you. If you're committed, you'll be advised for opinion.